Chapter 27. I'm sitting at a booth inside the base lodge at Mount Cortland, my right shoulder pressed up against the window overlooking the south side of the mountain. My mother is sitting across from me knitting an impractical but adorable ivory wool sweater for Linus, who is asleep in his umbrella stroller. I'm amazed that he can sleep through all the activity and noise in here. It's nearing lunchtime, and the room is starting to become crowded with chatty, hungry skiers, all stomping in their heavy boots on the hardwood floor. There are no rugs or curtains or decorative fabric of any kind in the lodge, nothing to absorb sound, and so every boot step and every voice bounces all over the room, creating an unmusical reverberation that will eventually give me a headache. My mother noticed a workbook of word search puzzles in the checkout line at the supermarket yesterday, and remembering that Heidi used to give word searches to me at Baldwin, she bought it. She loves any chance she gets to be my therapist. I'm working on one of the pages now, and I found 11 of the 20 words. I assume the remaining 9 are hidden somewhere on the left side, but I don't feel like hunting them down. I decide to daydream out the window instead. It's turned into a bright and sunny day, made even brighter by the reflection of the sun off so much white, and it takes a minute for my squinting eyes to adjust. I look around for the kids at their lessons on Rabbit Lane, over by the magic carpet lift, and spot Charlie in the middle of the hill on his snowboard. He falls backward onto his bottom and forward onto his knees every few seconds, but for the few seconds in between, while he's actually up, he appears to be moving really well, and it does look fun. Good thing he has young bones and is only about 4 feet tall, not very far from the ground he keeps crashing down onto. I can't imagine how sore and bruised and worn out I'd be if I were to fall that many times. I think about these last couple of months. Well, maybe I can imagine it. Then I find Lucy waiting at the top of the lift, probably for instruction. Unlike her fearless brother, she won't move one ski on her own without express permission. She's still doing nothing, and I've lost sight of Charlie, so my attention drifts to the right, as it's prone to do, to the bottom of Fox Run and Wild Goose Chase, my two favorite trails. I watch the skiers, indistinct blobs of red, blue, and black, sailing on a sea of white to the bottom, then snaking into the line for the quad lift in front of me. I wish I were out there. I watch one couple, I assume a husband and wife, come to a stop side by side just outside my window. Their cheeks and noses are pink, and they're smiling and talking. I can't make out what they're saying. For some reason, I want them to look up and notice me, but they don't. They turn back toward the mountain and get into the lift line, sliding forward a few feet at a time, getting ready to go again. They remind me of Bob and me. Everything around me is bombarding my senses, triggering an almost overwhelming urge to get my shiny new skis and get on that mountain. The sounds of the lodge, the smell of French fries, the intense brilliance of the outdoor light, imagining the feel of the cold mountain air inside my lungs and pressed against my cheeks and nose, watching the young couple's shared exhilaration after finishing a great run. I want to be out there. You will be. But I'm not so sure of myself. I'm having a hard enough time walking on flat, non-skid floors with the assistance of my granny cane. You will be, insists pre-accident me, her tone leaving zero room for any other acceptable possibility. Pre-accident me is so black and white, and it occurs to me that, like Charlie, she has more confidence than the goods to back it up. You will be. This time it's Bob's voice in my head, assured and encouraging. Reluctantly, I believe him. What's that? Asks my mother. What? I ask, wondering if I said any of what I was just thinking about aloud. Out there, that person coming down the mountain sitting down. I scan the blobs on the hill and don't see what she's talking about. Where? There, she points, and there's a skier standing behind it. I finally locate what she's looking at. Closer now, it looks like the front person is sitting on a sled attached to a ski, and the person behind is skiing and holding on to some kind of handle attached to the sled, most likely steering it. Probably someone who's handicapped, I say. Maybe you could do that, she says, her excited voice bouncing across the table at me like a ping-pong ball. I don't want to do that. Why not? Because I don't want to ski sitting down. Well, maybe there's a way for you to do it standing up. Yeah, it's called skiing. No, I mean a special way. You mean a handicapped way. I mean, maybe there's a way for you to ski now. I don't want to ski now unless I can do it the normal way, and I'm not ready. I don't want to be a handicapped skier. You're the only one using that word, Sarah. It doesn't matter. We don't own any special equipment, and I'm not investing thousands of dollars in some kind of ski sled that I don't want to use in the first place. Maybe they have them here. Excuse me, miss. My mother flags the attention of a young woman walking by our table. She's wearing the signature red and black Mount Cortland staff ski jacket. See that person out there skiing, sitting down? Did that person rent that equipment here? Yes, it's from NESA, New England Handicap Sports, she says. She glances over at my granny cane. It's in the building next door. I can take you over if you want. No thanks, I say before my mother has a chance to start packing up our things. Just curious, thanks. Can I bring you some information about it? No, we're good, thanks, I say. Okay, well, Nessa's right next door if you change your mind, she says and walks away. I think we should check it out, says my mother. I don't want to. But you've been dying to ski. That's not skiing, it's sitting. It's more like skiing than sitting in this booth. It's outside. It's away down the mountain. No thanks. Why not just give it a try? I don't want to. I wish Bob were here. He'd have choked the life out of this conversation in its first couple of breaths. The skier and the dog sled musher behind him come to stop in front of our window. The musher is wearing the same red and black jacket worn by the woman we just spoke with, an instructor. The skier's legs are strapped together and onto the sled. The skier is probably paralyzed from the waist down. I'm not paralyzed. Or maybe the skier is an amputee, and one or both of his legs are prosthetics. I have both of my legs. The skier and the instructor talk for a minute. The skier has a huge smile on his face. The instructor then guides the skier directly to the front of the line, where they both board the quad lift with far more ease than I expected. I watch them ride up the mountain and follow their ascent until their chair gets too small to distinguish. I spend the next half hour before lunch watching skiers and snowboarders zigzagging down Fox Run and Wild Goose Chase. But if I have to be honest, I'm watching the activity on the mountain with passive eyes. I'm searching for the sitting skier, but I don't see them again. To steal glances out through, but still catch them. Move for different trails. I check one more time as we're packing up our things to leave for home. I still don't see them. But if I close my eyes, I can see the skier's smiling face.